You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Hi, my name's Ron, and I'm calling from the Boston area. My summertime song is Katrina and the Waves, Walking on Sunshine.
Walking on Sunshine, what's your summer song? You can reach us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org.
Speaking of sunshine, at the G8 summit in Japan today, world leaders looks like they came to a compromise on global warming, endorsing a 50% cut in greenhouse gases by 2050, though they did stop short of some other targets. They all agree it is a critical issue. This year alone, deadly food riots have plagued many countries, coupled with droughts, earthquakes, heat waves, and cyclones have all triggered big questions about global warming. But a new study, which takes a look at warming and economics, concludes that natural catastrophes will not be shared equally. The authors actually argue that there is essentially a domino effect. Stephen Dubner, author of the book Freakonomics and the New York Times Freakonomics blog, is with us. A domino effect theory, Stephen?
Yeah, it's a fascinating paper that talks about how global warming will affect worldwide economies, okay? And the short answer is that it will affect economies differently because heat happens in different places. Heat does different things in different places. But the bottom line is that poor countries, no surprise here, but it's empirically argued, poor countries will suffer far more than rich countries as a result of climate change.
The correlations are really stark, though. I mean, you know, like temperature to civil war. Describe that, if you could.
So I don't want to bore you with too much detail, but there's a really fascinating body of literature within economics, agricultural economics, development economics, and so on, in which economists look for what you'd call shocks to the system. When you try to measure, for instance, why does a civil war happen in Africa? When you try to measure, for instance, why does a drought happen in Bavaria in the 18th century? It's very hard to pinpoint reasons because so many things happen at one time. Just as right now the our political candidates are trying to argue about how to pull the economy up, there's so many things happening in an economy that to say if I press one button, it will change everything. If it happens to change things, then you can argue that was the button that worked. But in fact, there were 100 other things working. So what economists try to do is isolate things. And they've made some very, very clever empirical studies of how things work. In one, looking at civil war in Africa, they found that drought is the single greatest predictor of a future civil war. Now, this makes sense. When you're dealing with agricultural economies, if you've got a drought, half a season or two seasons or three seasons later, you've got food shortages. Half a season or a month later, you've got political instability. Boom, you've got civil war.
And then there's the notion that that civil war in that country is going to trickle out to others. Let's look at a current example, which is in Haiti in April. The prime minister essentially had to step down in the face of massive food riots.
Yeah, food. Look, as much as we've been focusing on energy in media reporting in general, food is the other half of the story, and energy and food very much go together.
And more socially immediate. I mean, people, then the fuel issue.
Well, yes and no. I mean, talk to someone who's going to pay triple for heating oil, who's living in a cold climate this year, and that's going to be pretty socially immediate this winter. But yes, food is also food is an easier problem to solve in some ways than energy. But the point of this new paper, these three economists, I just want to name them, Melissa Dell, Ben Jones, and Ben Olkin. What they did was a very clever way of trying to measure the actual impact of temperature change. They looked back at temperature and precipitation data for every country in the world for the last 50 years and then compare that to economic growth in those countries. And they find that for poor countries, a rise of temperature of about 1 degree Celsius results in a growth shock, a negative growth shock of about 1% to the economy. And you get warmer, your economy has trouble. But that's only in poor countries. Rich countries adapt. We have many more resources to adapt to these things. So that's the real story there.
So Hollywood teaches us that global warming and climate change is going to involve some giant planetary scale disaster. You're saying, no, it's going to be something much more we're all pitted against each other.
Look, I don't want to be a total freak alarmist here.
Yes, you do.
Because that sounds like Armageddon is what
but if
just
you
wanted,
if you are the kind of person who likes to think apocalyptically, right, and you're an American, you have the wrong vision Okay, because if you're an American and you think apocalyptically, you think, holy cow, the mountains come crashing down, the seas come rising, we don't grow food, we don't heat our homes. That's probably not going to happen. What's going to happen is in poor countries, they will suffer unduly, and people from poor countries will be streaming to get into every country that's rich enough to adapt. Now, that probably doesn't surprise us so much if we think about it in a macro way, but what these economists have done is tried to look at the past to envision what climate change might mean for the future, and we may have been envisioning the wrong kind of apocalypse that global warming could bring, if it does bring one.
The amazing thing, though, and what I love about what you've written, is that the answers are from history, which means they're more in front of us than they are some visionary science fiction future.
It is true, and this is one of the strengths that economics can bring. But I don't want to overpromise the ability of economists to predict the future any more than climatologists, any more than psychics, frankly, because predicting the future is a fool's game.
But essentially, the takeaway very quickly here, the interconnectedness of it all. In other words, it's not just about the weather. It's about what the weather then triggers. If you're talking about drought, you're talking about less crops. If you're talking about less crops and there's less food, it's less food that's imported or exported. You're talking about all of these interrelated issues then trigger a bigger problem.
You're also talking about fear and weird little fringe effects. I'll give you two examples. During the mini ice age 400 or 500 years ago, when it got colder suddenly, women were accused of being witches who'd caused the cold, and there were witches being strung up all over Europe. Okay? Panic that's unrelated to reality. So
we'll leave it there, Stephen, because right now we need to turn for some headlines from Femi Oke. But Stephen Dubner is going to stay with us. Femi?
Hello there. Just coming up to 28 minutes.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.